So I'm funded by the CDC and Climate and Health Program. To start off with, before I get into the maps, I just wanted to do a quick poll. It's like my favorite thing to do as a presenter. So if everybody could stand up, it's going to be a standing poll. Today is National Garden Exercise Day, so I want to see what kind of gardeners we have in the crowd. So go ahead and sit down if you tend to zero plants, if you are not a gardener at all. Okay. How about if you have one plant? You can sit down. Okay. How about five plants? You can sit down.
Are we talking indoor?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. What about if you have 20 plants or less? Go ahead and sit down. That would be me. I have about maybe, I don't know, 16 or something. Okay, how about 25 to 50 plants? Sit down. Wow, we got some gardeners here. So how many plants do y'all have?
Including trees.
Yes, any plants. Yes. Do some of you want to offer how many plants you guys take care of? This is amazing.
Well, I've probably got 20 to 30 plants, but then I've got like hundreds of seedlings that I'm growing.
Wow. That's impressive. Anybody else want to tell us about your plants?
Well,
Renee?
I have four garden boxes that are 4 feet by 4 feet. It's hard to say how many plants are in there.
Yeah.
I would say hundreds.
Wow. Great.
And thousands of weeds.
Right. Exactly. I forgot to include those. Right. Okay. Well, happy Garden Exercise Day to everybody. And it's really impressive to hear about some of you and how many plants you tend to. So this first map I have... I was just going to, and this is part of why I tied in National Garden Exercise Day, is of labor-intensive crop acres. And it's a little hard to see because it's small, so I'm going to go ahead to the next one. But basically what we did, and I now am really accept how powerful it is to work with geographical health information in a map form and work with communities to improve those maps and talk about what's going on in their communities with health conditions. And how I came to this was really the CDC suggestion to do this. So this map is, and the hash marks are, can you guys see the hash marks?
Yeah.
You guys can see them. Okay, so those are high heat-related illness emergency department visits and by zip code. And then the larger kind of markups are by county. And what we did was... use a published report that looked at heat-related illness emergency department rates across North Carolina from an academic partner, and so basically just took that map, and then we brought it to the community that we had the highest rates of heat-related illness in North Carolina, the southeast part of the state, and here's where, if you want to see some of the bullets, feel free to like, elbow somebody next to you who has a full printout, but... And we asked them, you know, what sort of risk factors would you like to see mapped? And we also did provide them information from this published report. There was, in this published paper, regression analyses done that identified several closely connected risk factors, and so we presented them to them. And then basically what we did was anonymous polling. So I don't know if any of you are familiar with that sort of meeting facilitation technique, but what you do is just basically give everybody an index card or a piece of paper, and you ask them questions. Like, so we ask them questions about when you drive through your county on a hot day, who do you see outside? Or who do you think is at risk for heat-related illness? We had several questions, maybe two or three, that we asked them to answer about heat-related illness risks and what might be helpful to be mapped. And after everybody writes those things down, you collect all the index cards, you put them together, and you pass them back out, and everybody reads whatever card they have. And so it's kind of a way for people to anonymously give their input, to get input from everybody, and to have people also consider other people's answers. So where I heard this example first was people who work with coastal hazards with NOAA Sea Grant program use this, because sometimes it's real, you know, sometimes maybe the local planner doesn't want to raise their hand and say this is an issue. But if you ask them to write it down and then somebody else reads the answer anonymously, it's a way to get good impact. So we've used this at quite a lot of our community meetings, and I strongly recommend it. I'd be happy to talk to you more about how to use it. Let me see exactly what my slide said. So part of what I wanted to also point out from this background slide was that effective adaptation to climate change, I think, requires first identifying what your priority health impacts are in your jurisdiction, and then also prioritizing geographical vulnerabilities. So in North Carolina, it was I think for me it was intuitive to identify what our top priority health impacts were. But then I was kind of like asking the CDC, like, I don't know what to do from here, you know? Like, how do I focus on a whole state, on a program that's just funded for 2.5 people? And so their guidance to us was to do vulnerability assessment through geographical mapping. And we had engagement meetings, which I've mentioned. And in total, based on the engagement meetings we had, we've created 7 heat-related illness maps that we're now using to do adaptation work and to specifically plan out interventions in the vulnerable population. And I'll touch a little bit more. Hopefully, I think I'm getting to show you about 5 of the maps. So the first one here is labor-intensive crop acres. And this was largely supported by agriculture extension in the counties. And how we identified that was using, I believe it was USDA data, and then we asked agriculture extension to specifically help us identify which crops were labor-intensive. Like, for example, I would have put tobacco on that list, and they were like, well, actually, most of tobacco is now mechanized, but, you know, so there's a lot of fruits on this list. There's sweet potatoes. They were able to specifically tell us what sort of crops require the most exposure to heat. And so then we're also suggested to look at people working in, like, manufacturing industry. This region of the state that we've ended up focusing on has a large manufacturing industry. And as if any of you got to go to this morning's presentation, so North Carolina manufacturing facilities, most of them don't have air conditioning. So that's quite a hot work environment. So this was my method slide. A big part of our methodology for developing these maps was recruiting local stakeholders. So we reached out to local nonprofits, local governments, like a local health director, I'm trying to think who else, emergency management service director, local healthcare companies. So we had quite a lot of involvement from the hospitals in the area and the folks who do emergency response preparedness for them. We developed those potential map layers for the risk factors from the anonymous polling technique. And we also used census data layers for quite a lot of this. So this data came from census layers. We've used census layers for mobile homes, the population over 65, and then also for poverty. And part of what I want to show you by showing all these different maps is how different they all look. So, you know, here you can really see, like, oh, in this area where we have high rate of heat-related illness here, it seems like we've got a lot of folks in manufacturing. But in this map, you know, it's a much more moderate level in that same zip code. So this is what I'm talking about with really helping us develop local climate change adaptation that's effective, so we can really see zip code by zip code maybe what the potential risk factor contributions are and what population we might want to focus on in that zip code in order to do something effective for adaptation. And so another suggestion was for us to do mobile homes. I didn't grow up in a mobile home, so I'm still learning about this, but some of you may know that mobile homes are generally inefficient, and when I've driven through this region and seen some of the mobile home communities, sometimes you only see, you know, for a long mobile home, you only see one air conditioning unit on one end. And so you can imagine in the summertime that wouldn't keep the whole mobile home cool. I've also talked with people who grew up in this region in mobile homes or with friends in mobile homes and said that actually they spend most of their summer outside of the mobile homes because it's hotter inside the mobile home than outside. So you can imagine if somebody, for example, works in the manufacturing industry and has heat exposure all day and then can't cool off at night, what a big problem that creates. The other thing we've started to look at is just energy poverty. So you can imagine that some of the folks who can afford mobile homes might be working at minimum wage, and to cool a mobile home during the summer might cost several hundred dollars. So you can imagine if you're making $800 a month, you can't possibly afford to spend $300 on cooling. So this is my results slide. So 7 risk factors were identified for mapping. The maps were used to determine sub-county population of focus. And next up, we're going to be doing phone interviews of all our stakeholders as a part of, some of you might be familiar with, like, the community readiness model of engaging communities before they make change or interventions or adaptations. So that's what the CDC is suggesting we do next. And so some of this will be incorporated into what we survey the local stakeholders about. And also, this has just been a huge tool for vulnerability discussion in these communities. So we you know, sometimes printed out things that were about this big posters for the meetings, had people walk around, take a look at them before they answer the anonymous polling questions. And so this was another risk factor that was identified, population over age of 65. One of the EMS directors for Sampson County here told us examples of, like, people over the age of 65 not really perceiving if they were sick from the heat as maybe... I don't think they had a high risk perception, and I also think they felt like they were a burden to the EMS. So they would say that they would get this call at like 9 a.m. from older people, and they'd be like, well, I've been feeling bad since last evening, but I didn't want to bother you in off hours. Indeed, you see like one zip code in Sampson County in the eastern part that's got high heat-related illness rates and then also a high level of population over the age of 65. And the seven risk factors we identified for mapping, you'll see five of the maps here, were older age, so over the age of 65, labor-intensive crops, mobile homes, employment in an industry with high likelihood of heat exposure, which we translated as manufacturing, poverty, and then they also identified diabetes and obesity. We didn't end up mapping those because those rates are just for the county, and so the we talked about the rates of those illnesses, but particularly in like Robeson County, they're very concerned about the pre-existing health conditions. And then this is my conclusion slide. My conclusions were that geographical specificity is needed for effective climate change adaptation in North Carolina. I was had not really fully accepted, I think, the power of doing geographical mapping before I did this project, and I would say that it's probably really powerful across public health, but especially for our climate change adaptation work is just really helpful in producing the specificity to, I think, do effective adaptation. And, you know, our grant has 2.5 people, so think about how we can really effectively do adaptation across 5 counties. It really requires that kind of specificity with our limited resources. And then I also just want to say I feel like the GIS maps are a powerful discussion for vulnerability with the local stakeholders. So, for example, this one zip code here that you see with the high rates of heat-related illness, one of our key stakeholders from Robeson County, a minister who leads a nonprofit there, came to us and said, you know, you need to really drive around that county and drive around that zip code. And so he took us around specific communities in that zip code that he felt like had the highest vulnerability, that he interacts with a lot, that were vulnerable to heat-related illness. And I would say that that's even a really powerful part of the map. We're intending, hopefully, this summer to spend some time just driving through these zip codes with high rates of heat-related illness, because I think by encouraging your stakeholders to think about what it's like to physically be in a space, and for us to actually see physically what it looks like is really important to understand how to implement adaptation work. And so this is a population below the poverty level overlaid with the high rates of heat-related illness. And again, I just think it's pretty powerful to just see how different the different zip codes look depending on the risk factor. So things sometimes that are a really big issue in one zip code, you see really low rates of another zip code. And then this is my thank you slide. This is one of our meetings. We were really fortunate that an EIS officer was coming, I think, for a visit in North Carolina, and she was able to come to one of the meetings. So this is her talking to one of the local stakeholders, and you see the big printout of the maps we have. And one other map we did, actually, that I didn't show that was pretty helpful, I think, for people is, as many of you have probably heard from statisticians, zip codes are not really meant for measuring health information. And so even people at the local level would be like, I can't really identify what's in that zip code sometimes. And so this map we actually overlaid with county roads. So people could see, you know, like, oh, 95 goes through that zip code, and they could pick out then what community it was based on that. And so this thank you slide has, thank you for, this work has been really closely informed by some geography experts at our one of whom is funded by a RISA, Regional Integrated Science Assessment at UNC, Dr. Ashley Ward. Kelly Squires, our CST fellow, has also been very helpful. She does a lot of ArcGIS mapping, and we had somebody do a lot of mapping this summer, and then when we got feedback from the RISA that, you know, we should, be doing this in quintiles instead of with natural breaks, Kelly Squires came in and did it all with quintiles. we also thank a summer student we had from NC State, a master's student in GIS. And then the original published work was by some, Dr. Maggie Thug, who's now in Appalachian State University. And, of course, our community stakeholders who really helped us shape the maps. And then, as I mentioned, I'm funded by a CDC cooperative agreement. And then I also had an NC Detect disclaimer in here. So the high rates of heat-related illness hash marks were from our emergency department data. And, you know, what I've presented doesn't necessarily represent their views. There's also my contact information on there. So some of that's circulating. And I have a few cards, so maybe I'll just pass those down at the end during questions or something, or you're welcome to come get one from me afterwards.
Is your email ever easy to detect?
Well, I feel like my name's not that easy, but it's there's no Bard in here. So it's just lauren.thie@dhhs.nc.gov. Or my phone number is 919-707-5931. Feel free to call. So thank you.